right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, September 1st, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is 68 degrees and nice and sunny here in upstate New York. Can you even believe that it is September 1st? Because I know I can't. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show DIY Gene Hackers, CRISPR, 23andMe, and the National Institute of Health Biobank, as well as Google Genomics. Yeah, there are some pretty disturbing things. I don't know. We covered pretty much the same stuff for the last 2 days. I would say on Tuesday, it was more a broad brush, and yesterday we kind of did a deep dive into a couple of the topics. But what was very disturbing was really kind of outlining how this biological warfare program, A, never ended back from at least World War II, and I'm going to guess that it's way beyond that. I don't know. I'm working on a couple documentaries that I've been watching on the history of the whole program and what's going on right now. And it's very, very, very disturbing. We discovered that the CRISPR technology has been shipped all over the planet with absolutely no controls whatsoever. We have James Clapper, the head of, I don't even know what he is, National Intelligence or something, coming out in front of a Senate Armed Services Committee saying, yeah, well, biowarfare and gene editing and CRISPR are kind of going to cause us trouble in the future, especially if rogue agents get their hands on them. But oh, no big deal that there's no controls. We found out that there's absolutely, right now, no controls over these private labs or the DIYs. We read about the DIY gene editing kits, and everybody's doing it in their back bedroom, in their garage. We had the one kid in Long Island. We had the other guy in his shed in Mississippi. And nobody's watching the store. And I mean, granted, it's probably some little E. coli bacteria that maybe won't be able to make a killer virus. But I'm going to tell you, you know, the guys in their garages and their sheds in their mommy's back bedroom aren't the only ones with this technology. We have foreign actors. We have China that has put the pedal to the metal in regards to trying to overtake us in everything, in manufacturing, in science exploration, in artificial intelligence. And you want to know why? Because all of those technologies are now the technologies of warfare. You know, there was a story, and I really don't want to get off topic, so I might skip it for today, and maybe we'll hit it tomorrow. But I had two stories, and we'll just do the title, but I'm not going to dig into them. One was, I was looking through my DARPA news alerts that I get on a daily basis. DARPA sees the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence as weapons to dominate wars. Oh, yay! So that explains, of course, like I said, all this research is being funded by Department of Defense departments, namely DARPA and rich tech billionaires, but don't worry about them. And DARPA isn't about rescuing little kittens out of puddles, okay? DARPA funds ways to dominate in war. So anything that's going to be DARPA funded, like DNA manufacturing at MIT and Harvard through the Broad Institute, for $32 million, I mean, that isn't going to be to cure your cancer. I mean, maybe in the end it'll end up being to cure your cancer, but it's not what it's going to start out to be. So after we looked at a lot of this insanity, the DIY hackers, the AdGene 60,000 CRISPRs, we mentioned the DOD sending out all that anthrax across the globe before they realize, whoops, it wasn't quite dead yet. like Monty Python, bring out your dead. The FDA, I always say it's the CDC, but it was the FDA that found all the anthrax vials sitting on top of filing cabinets somewhere. Complete sloppiness. No bio level 4 security in any of these genomic labs. We have the bird flu. I found both those stories. I knew it. I remember those very distinctly. The bird flu published not once but twice on ways to make it more virulent to kill everybody on the planet, as well as the CDC reconstructing the 1918 pandemic virus. Like, what? How on earth has this been allowed to happen? And I know we argue for transparency, and I'm kind of glad that I know what they're doing. But on the other hand, with the advent of the internet, just letting information like that out there and letting our adversaries know that we are developing bioweapons, we are doing research on something that could potentially be a bioweapon. We have the Department of Defense, DARPA, working on weaponizing the Internet of Things. And after we found out about the CubeSats blanketing the upper atmosphere to be able to make that Internet of Things connectivity from a space level, you know, I honestly, when I look at some of the foreign actors, namely China and Russia, who are seeming a little nervous, who have itchy trigger fingers to get into the lab to start competing with us, not only are these technologies going to be used for warfare, but they're also going to be used to launch us into this wonderful 21st century. Remember, precision medicine, Obama said it was all about being able to fuel the new economy. So we have an all balls out, complete, utter biological arms race going on here right now under the covers at a microscopic level that I don't think is going to end well. How can any of this end well? All it takes is one little oops or one little lunatic to decide they're going to swipe a couple doorknobs in a public place. Like I've said before, you get Typhoid Mary, and that's the end of that. Some big international airport. I used to have nightmares. I read The Stand back in the 70s. It must have been, oh, if I had to guess, I would say 78 or 79. And I read the paperback version first, which was about 500 pages. And then I got the unabridged hard copy, which was about 1,100 pages. And I read that, and then I saw the movie years later. Was nowhere near as good. Miniseries 3 days, and I don't know. The actors weren't how I had envisioned them in my mind, so it didn't really work for me. But that book, The Stand, if you've never read it, and there have been a lot of outbreak movies since those days, but I'm going to tell you, Stephen King just has a way with words, and he was way in the beginning. He saw things. He saw what it could potentially be. That book scared the living daylights out of me. And you know, guys, we're right about there now. And it's not to say we haven't been there. Actually, I mentioned that I was watching the documentary, or it was actually a lecture out of Lawrence Livermore on biowarfare. It was from the end of last year, so 2015, December of 2015. They were talking about the Russian biological warfare program and how advanced they'd been. And you know what's interesting about that is I never really read into the Russian program, but I had learned somewhat about it when I first started digging into Dr. Huber that has made a lot of the connecting points between glyphosate and the colony collapse disorder with the bees, and found that new life form in the soil. You know, Dr. Huber, if you look at his CV and really look into what he's done and who he is, they actually mention he is the world's leading expert on the Russian biowarfare program. Because you know what? That's what he did when he worked he's still advising, but I guess at one point he had some official title. He was helping over at Plum Island, Fort Detrick, when he was in the service. But Dr. Huber is the world's foremost expert on the Russian biowarfare program. So, you know, like I said a few days back, back in the 80s, at least for me and my small little puny 18 to 20-year-old brain, the only real apocalyptic vision that I had in those days to be cautious about was, of course, getting nuked, because they had us all hyped up that Russia was going to blow us up. But it seems, looking at what we see now and some of the stuff that went on before we were born, that continued under the covers before we even knew there was such a thing as conspiracy or shady federal governments, that they'd all been working on this insane biological apocalypse long, long before we ever knew. And now today it's all being done in the name 21st century medicine. Of course, you have places like that Synlogic. It's creating synthetic gut bacteria to reprogram you and fix you. We got self-replicating synthetic bacterial cells. I think that's where we're going to kick it off. We talked about Craig Venter, so I wanted to do a little bit of backgrounding on Craig Venter. But then we got DARPA as well, working with MIT and the Broad Institute for DNA design and manufacturing, splicing and dicing from a database. And it's just so easy now, and as well as 23andMe. And that's kind of where we ended the show. 23andMe and Google have now gotten into the genomics game. 23andMe took a large amount of funding from the National Institute of Health and shares their genomics database that they've collected from millions of participants who checked that box to be able to be a part of DNA studies. They're using all of that information to be able to create this next generation of insanity. They're going to modify humans all in the name of curing disease. And they're going to use the tools as tools of warfare. Like I said, this cannot end well. So we discovered Craig Venter created the first self-replicating synthetic bacterial cell back in 2010. And that's at least when they first announced it. And it's got to make you wonder when we run across stories that talk about discovering, you know, and this is just fast forward 5 or 6 years later, where they discovered 35 new groups of bacteria never, ever before seen in a waterway in Colorado. We have DARPA working on shape-shifting vaccines to protect you against anything and everything. Why do you think? You know, this is how they're going to sell it. I postulated this back a few months ago, and the more I dig, guys, I really think I might be right. You know, DARPA is working on the shape-shifting immune system, and they're saying that it's going to be a vaccine, but it's really not a vaccine. Don't worry about it. It's gene therapy. It actually goes in and it changes your DNA, but it makes your DNA adaptable to be able to manipulate itself based upon any type of biological threat that it detects. And like I said, it's very, very similar to that DEFCON DARPA Grand Challenge they just had in Las Vegas, where they hit hackers and 7 supercomputers developing the new shape-shifting immune system for the internet that will allow computer systems and networks to be able to patch holes, detect and stop viruses before anyone even knows that something has happened. It's the same concept. DARPA wants shape-shifting vaccines that adapt real-time when fighting killer viruses. And here is the plan. Let's look at this again. Just kind of set the stage here. We talked about this back in April when the story first came out, but I think we've laid a lot of groundwork since then. So now let's take a look at this again with some context. In an effort to curb virus-causing infectious diseases that kill millions of people each year, yes, or to defend against biowarfare agents never before seen in the environment that someone might have accidentally created in their shed or mommy's back bedroom or a cave in Afghanistan, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, is embarking on a very ambitious project. It wants to develop vaccines that can shapeshift. DARPA announced its program called Interfering, I-N-T-E-R, all in caps, and then fearing in small, and co-evolving prevention and therapy, more affectionately known as Intercept, where the main goal is to create a vaccine for broad-spectrum viral strains that not only may adapt to the changes of the strains, but also may outpace their development, allowing the vaccine to prevent the spread of the infection. So they're going to create the shape-shifting immune system that'll be able to detect and destroy any type of pathogen that is known, that is mutated, or that is unknown, acting in an anomalous way, just like intrusion prevention and detection on a computer network. It'll be typically intrusion prevention and detection will be able to quarantine, but it typically won't kill it because it's not autonomous unless there is interaction. Well, the new DEFCON software that they were tinkering with and challenging each other with actually is unattended. It is autonomous, as will this new interfering intercept shape-shifting immune system. No intervention required. Viruses are some of the simplest types of infectious agents in the world, but they can be very difficult to treat since they evolve or introduce new strains. And although there are vaccines available, many of the world's killers, like HIV. Now, we heard, if anyone listened to Tim Kelly last night, there was that episode on HIV, and I've heard that one before. It was great. He had an OBGYN who started to really dig into the studies and the research, and she said that everything they've been telling us about HIV, and I know I've heard this many times before, but this was a pretty hard-hitting interview, is absolute utter bullshit, and it actually is a deficiency in sulfur and a few other bodily chemicals that causes it. It's not actually a virus. So I don't know. I mean, Zika too, you're seeing all these anomalous things happening with Zika. First it didn't cause any symptoms, then it caused mini brains, then it caused not being able to think clearly, bumping into walls. I mean, I don't know. Like, every day there's some new symptom. Long term, oh my God, Zika is going to cause the end of the human thinking race. Yes, 12 monkeys, Otto. 12 monkeys, one of my favoritest. Is that a word? Most favorite all-time movies. You haven't seen 12 Monkeys, you must. You must, you must. And both Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt were in that. Absolutely not typical roles for either of them. It was an amazing movie. But yes, it talked about after the world had been wiped out by some biological pathogen. No one could live up above anymore. Anyway, meanwhile, some vaccines like those of the flu are very common viral conditions responsible for only 6,000 deaths a year in the United States. And by the way, I actually knew someone who died of the flu. It was pretty awful. It was my boss's wife at Christmas, no less. It was horrible. But just be aware, I'm going to give you a tip. If someone has the flu and they are losing fluids, replace those fluids even if they can't keep them down. Because I don't know if you know this, but once you get to a certain point, within a day or so of not hydrating your body, your organs start to shut down, just so you know. And once they get to a certain point, there's nothing they can do. So, yes, the flu, 6,000 deaths a year in the United States, all of them unfortunate, have to be changed every year because there's a new viral strain every year, and the vaccines don't always work. Like this year and last year, they said they didn't work at all. But don't worry about it, because DARPA came up with other ways around that. Remember, because of the difficulty in predicting next year's flu strain and the length of time it takes to grow the vaccine in egg embryos, that was where DARPA partnered up with Texas A&M and I think it was Philip Morris, growing GMO tobacco and creating flu antibodies in the tobacco. And that was going to be the universal flu vaccine back in those days for the part of the Blue Angel program. Anyway, we need a new paradigm to stay ahead of these moving targets. Now, I was told in a preparedness class that was put up by FEMA back in 2006, and I was still naive at the time, and I signed up for it. It was actually pretty good. So we had a lot of feds there talking all about preparing for disasters. But back in those days, in 2006, they had already told us that the government was working on a universal flu vaccine. I'm wondering if, in all the research that we've done since, it's really looking to me like that universal flu vaccine was just the beginnings of the shape-shifting immune system, because it's not just the flu. Now we have pathogens across the gamut that could be released at any time, anywhere, that could spread like wildfire. And I think when we had the last quote-unquote pandemic, which of course wasn't really a pandemic, and there was lots of stories that came out that had stated that the World Health Organization jumped the shark with prompting from Big Pharma to declare a pandemic so they could start pushing their vaccines. But they had shown, there was a lot of research being done back in that quote-unquote pandemic that never was. And one of them, one of the studies, was looking at how fast a pandemic could spread across the globe. And I don't quite remember right now what the exact amount of time was, but guys, it was within a few days. I mean, with the advent of travel and being able to fly, it doesn't take too long. I mean, what is it from one side of the planet to the other? You can make it to New Zealand and, I don't know, back in the 70s, it took like 2.5 days. It's nowhere near that now. They can do direct flights. You don't got to stop in Pago Pago or Fiji anymore to refuel. And so it doesn't take very long. So from one side of the planet to the other, all it takes is one or two Typhoid Marys with something extremely virulent to touch a few doorknobs in a bathroom at an international airport. You got yourself a global pandemic. It's pretty sobering to realize how precarious every day that we don't have some sort of biological disaster is. I think we need to all have some beers tomorrow night and sit and contemplate that fact, because we take life for granted, guys. We take what we have right now. We complain about it. We always complain. We look at what we have and we're like, oh, what was me? But you know what, guys? It could be way, way, way worse. Apocalyptic scenarios are not very pretty. And you know, we think, with all the crazy stuff going on in the government and all this insanity, taking away our rights and whatever, people getting pissed off, we think that someday they're going to come marching down the streets, take us on one-on-one. You know what, guys? It's not going to take that. It's not going to take that at all. You know, they want to get the Internet of Things into everybody. And I told you, my prediction is Typhoid Mary goes out and touches a couple doorknobs, and you're going to have two choices. There's not going to be any in between. Choice number one is do nothing and see how the CRISPR genetically engineered shape-shifting killer flu that they created in the lab and whoops, let out in a couple places. Let's just see how your immune system fares, because it's probably not going to do very well after they've engineered it to be 99.999% effective at wiping people out. Your other option is going to be, hey, guess what? As part of the emergency preparedness plan, we have this thing called Project BioShield. It was created by George Bush. And you know what? All these experimental vaccines that they've been developing that we really haven't done a lot of testing on were put into the strategic stockpile. And I'll guarantee you, this shape-shifting immune system will be in there as well. And we're going to start handing those out to all the communities across America, because you can go to your high school now in a pandemic. There will be people trained to give those injections to be able to save the population. So that's your choice. Either get infected or get our experimental vaccine that should work, but that is probably going to modify you in some way to make you a part of the Internet of Things once it's all over and we've cleaned up all the messy piles of dead people. And guys, I don't see a pretty future. I don't see how we could fight against the U.S. military in deep dark labs down some scary dark hallway that are working on developing things like this. But you know what? If they want to push us to a wall, if they want to get all of us into the control matrix, it's not going to take very much. The joke's going to be on us. Any of us who thought storing water and storing ammo and storing freeze-dried food was going to protect us, well, it didn't quite help out in regards to some sort of bioengineered global biowarfare pathogen that could have very well been released by one of our own scientists in the name of clamping down. When I read this stuff, it's very disturbing to me that the general public is letting this all happen. And again, we find out there aren't any high-level biosecurity level 4 happening in the commercial space with people that are messing around with these pathogens. I would imagine that at least at DARPA and in some of the military installations that are messing with this stuff, they must have bio-level 4, but then we see time and time again that they're very sloppy, including at the CDC and the FDA and the DOD. They're not following chains of command. They're all human like you and me. Americans tend to be sloppy and lazy. So how long is it going to be before something like this gets out even accidentally? I mean, I was accusing them of maybe thinking about doing it on purpose, but how about accidentally? Anyway, DARPA's planning to use therapeutic interfering particles known as TIPS, which can act like a regular virus, only that they are a dud. They don't have any effect when they enter into the host cell. However, these tiny-like virus entities made of laboratory-grown snippets of genetic material packaged inside of protein shells will then try to outcompete, remember this, and outpace the real virus inside of the cell. So they just reproduce uncontrollably to try to starve out the real virus. Sounds like a bad idea to me. I don't want this inside of me. And as the real virus replicates itself, so will TIPS. But because TIPS can be designed to do it faster, they can ultimately lower the viral load by 20 times, significantly reducing the spread of the infection, making symptoms more manageable. And TIPS is made of genetic material, just like real viruses, but it's probably synthetic genetic material, and they can evolve and hopefully then prepare themselves to tackle potentially new viral strains. So, guys, that is that DARPA shape-shifting immune system that has been in the works for quite a long time. We have all these never-before-seens in nature, and I told you, anytime we see a never-before-seen, raise an eyebrow. Because there seems to be a lot of never-before-seens recently, just over the last few years. And I've been paying attention closely to weird news for quite a number of years. It's kind of my thing. That's why this show's so much fun, but not really, because now it's serious. It's not as fun as it used to be, like milking rats. I don't remember what they were called, snatchels. But never before scenes are happening on a daily basis, and I kind of call bullshit on that. I really do. Bullshit. You know, I saw a story the other day about military bases now linked to drinking water contamination in Pennsylvania. We also found out those 35 new bacteria families that are adding new branches to the tree of life in Colorado is downstream from a uranium processing mill. That water is highly contaminated. It was pointed out to me that Rocky Flats is nearby. So, you know, are these strains accidental or did they happen because of contamination? Well, here's a new one. Now, talking about Dr. Huber again, we heard an interview with him talking about glyphosate, aka Roundup, being a potent antibiotic. It damages bacteria, typically beneficial bacteria, not only in your gut, but in the soil. They've been finding glyphosate in rainwater as well as in breast milk. So it is very ubiquitous in the environment. It's the most popular weed killer on the planet. Well, a story came out yesterday that was pretty shocking. For the very first time, and that's what caught my attention, ding, ding, superbugs. I remember just a few months ago, very first time, superbugs show up in the U.S., some super E. coli. Well, for the very first time now, superbugs are found in drinking water. What? Now, remember Obama last summer inked an executive order to fight superbugs. And antibiotic resistance. But then I'd read a bunch of studies saying that, well, glyphosate is actually one of the big players, not giving antibiotics to patients or putting it in animal feed, but glyphosate itself that's sprayed all over crops all over the world is actually responsible for a lot of the super bug epidemic that's happening everywhere. They also found a nightmare bacteria. This is another new one, and this is all within the last 3 days. Nightmare bacteria found in Southern California sewage plant, and they said it's because they're chlorinating the sewage, and the chlorine is causing superbugs. Guys, we got military bases dumping shit causing superbugs. We got chlorine and sewage causing superbugs. And now, for the first time ever, in drinking water, they are finding superbugs in what appears to be a first-time discovery. And I believe this one was in France. Researchers have now found a drug-resistant superbug in the drinking water of a developed country. The discovery of antibiotic-resistant E. coli bacteria in water samples from France highlights, quote, the presence of expanding reservoirs of these resistant genes, including reservoirs in the environment, says a press release. Now, think about this. We can't live without water. We can't. You die. Like I said, with the flu. If you become dehydrated within a day or two, your organs start to shut down. And within this week, I found three or four stories now talking about birthing superbugs in waterways or brand new bacterias never before seen ever on the tree of life in waterways. Guys, you know, they had warned a long time about bioterror on our aquifers. And I don't think this is bioterror, but I think there's something planned, especially when how suspiciously Obama has this executive order back last June or July about superbugs. What? We never really heard about superbugs much except for MRSA. And MRSA could be squirted with some 30 parts per million silver, and it worked pretty well. So I call bullshit on this. Not bullshit that it's not there, because I think there's some danger, Will Robinson. But it's very disturbing that now they're actually finding it in drinking water. The research appeared this month in the Journal of Antimicrobial Agents and Chemotherapy, a publication for the American Society of Microbiology. Quote, drinking water was rarely recognized as a source of the antimicrobial resistance for humans and only in low-income countries. But our findings highlight the possible human transfer of genes through drinking water in high-income countries and widespread enzymes conferring resistance to broad-spectrum antibiotics. Says a scientist who worked on the paper explained the significance of these findings in a statement. Quote, all potential reservoirs, human, animal, and environmental are now contaminated by E. coli that is drug resistant. What does that mean? Though this contamination strongly varies depending on the studied reservoir and the country, no one is protected from the sporadic presence in places that should be free of this resistant bacteria. Now, how did all potential reservoirs get contaminated just whoop out of the blue? Never before seen, guys. This is one of those screaming red buttons. Boop, 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 boop. Yeah, this just happens. It just, you know, just happened. Nevertheless, water supplies in France are constantly improving as new potential threats are taken into account. A researcher tested 1 liter water samples collected in sterile bottles containing sodium thiosulfate at the point where drinking water enters the distribution system or to a point of consumption. And the superbug threat made headlines this summer. Oh, yes, don't forget, Rio was loaded with it. That had to put it kind of in the public eye. I sort of ignored the Olympics, but I'm sure a lot of people didn't. And so the whole world learned about polluted water and infectious diseases in water. So now's a good time to roll it out and tell everyone it's in your drinking water. Just like in Rio. It's the way they teach dumb people. Scientists at the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro carried out tests in areas including Guaro Bay, which was the sailing venue, over the course of a year. And they told CNN that they had found the highest level of superbugs of the sort found in hospitals on the shores of the bay, with pollution problems also evident on all of the tourist beaches. How wonderful is that? That story was from August 29th, so 2 days ago, 2016. So let's look at this next story. Treated wastewater may contribute to the creation of superbugs, according to a study. For decades, scientists have been investigating what effect drugs and other chemicals that get into the wastewater may have on the environment and human health. More recently, they have become interested in how disinfection treatments can change them into new compounds. And a new study suggests Chlorination of wastewater may transform antibiotics into new forms. Says new forms of antibiotics actually may be contributing to the development of antibiotic resistance in the environment. So guys, we've been putting chlorination into the water for a lot of years. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, every June or July, the water out of the faucet back in those days when we drank water out of the faucet would get really stinky, smell like the pool. Here's another one. Nightmare bacteria found at Southern California sewage plant. So-called nightmare bacteria that kills nearly half of its victims has been found at a wastewater treatment plant in Southern California. And sewage plants do not seem capable of killing it. Researchers at the Environmental Protection Agency recently found in a Los Angeles sewer plant something that should not be in a sewage plant. Amid, could you imagine how horrifying the LA sewage plant must be? Amid millions of gallons of raw sewage that Southern Californians spew into the sewer plant every day, there was a strain of super lethal super bug floating around, the same one that sickened 7 people and killed 2 in a Los Angeles hospital last year. This super bug is known as carbapenem, C-A-R-B-A-P-E-N-E-M, carbapenem-resistant enterobacteriaceae, or CRE for short. The U.S. EPA declined to reveal the name of the sewage plant where the bug was found, according to the L.A. Times. But a growing number of studies show sewage plants cannot kill the superbugs. Instead, the facilities serve as a luxury hotel, quote-unquote, for drug-resistant bacteria, a place where they thrive and grow stronger, says Pedro Alvarez, a professor of environmental engineering at Rice University and one of the scientists studying the sewage problem. Chlorine is just not doing it, he says. What do you say about that? We got some massive insanity going on right now. So, you know, as they're talking about doing toilet to tap, there's been a lot of that discussion. California actually did a story on Antimedia last year about as part of the California quote-unquote drought. Even though they were allowing Nestle to suck out groundwater and fracking companies to use groundwater, and then they discovered they polluted it all. California is under a serious drought. I don't know how that's gotten. They've gotten a little bit of rain, but they're under major wildfires now. But they had talked. And I bet you if you search toilet to tap and anti-media, you'll find my story. Toilet to tap and anti-media. I think it was last year. Let's see. It's been a while. San Diego. That's who it was. Big city. Here it is. Actually, it was November 20th, 2014. And is this? This better be my story. Yes, it's my story. All right. November 20th, 2014. San Diego votes yes on toilet to tap recycled drinking water project. And this story did not. I don't think people realize what toilet to tap means, I guess, or they just didn't believe it. This story only got 19 shares on Facebook. It's pretty depressing. But considering what's going on right now with super bugs in the sewage system, this is kind of a big deal. As Californians struggle with historic drought, so I'm going to read my own story. I don't do this too often. San Diego has decided to take drastic measures to ensure future water independence. On Tuesday, back in November of 2014, the San Diego City Council voted unanimously in favor of a controversial toilet-to-tap project called Pure Water San Diego, which will recycle sewer water into potable drinking water. I hope nobody's eating breakfast, because that would make me barf. They're also talking about doing that in Texas. Texas was under a serious drought for quite a long time. They were in stage 3 drought last year before they got all those torrential rains that flooded them out for months on end. And now their aquifers are back up, but there were a couple locales in the southwestern part of the state that were working to implement toilet to tap. And I know my one friend that lives there was gagging his head off. It was pretty pissed off about it. Because who the hell wants to drink toilet water or shower in it? I know, not me. Regardless of the fact that water importation is less expensive today, official state analysis show that over the long term, recycling water will come down in cost and allow San Diego to be more independent and poised for growth. And by 2035, the hope is for 1/3 of that city's water to be recycled. You know, and then they use this microfiltration and all this crap to filter out microbes. But I mean, it makes you really wonder how many pharmaceuticals are going to be filtered out. How many psychotropics are going to be filtered out? How many superbugs are going to be filtered out? We discovered that those 35 new bacterial branches discovered in Colorado were so tiny that the reason why they never found them before is because they never had filtration that was fine enough to be able to capture those bacteria. So, I don't know. Put on a seatbelt, people. Pickens, T. Boone Pickens, the oil mogul from Texas, who decided to move some of his investments out of oil and move them into blue gold, as he called it. I believe he owns the Algoff Aquifer, which is underneath the very top left portion, northern south, well, northern western Texas is where Algoff starts, right? And there's lots of argument as to whether or not it's right before or right after that Andrews, Texas nuclear waste repository that they are currently taking all of that WIP waste after that WIP facility in New Mexico started spewing radiation. They had to stop taking the Manhattan Project waste over there, and they started taking it to an above ground facility in West Texas. And when I really started digging into that facility, and I don't remember the name of it, but there's only one, so you can't miss it. When I started digging into that, and actually Libby Haleve, I sent her some documentation that I dug up on that, and she did 2 whole shows on it. And actually got a woman that's been following it in Texas with one of the nuclear agencies to come on as a guest. And it's pretty horrifying. But they're putting all this nuclear waste, and it was a billionaire, rich billionaire that owned that dump. And he had paid some people off he was accused of and whatever. But there were questions as to whether or not that nuclear waste dump was over the top of the end of that Algoff aquifer. That aquifer feeds 7 states. So if you look it up, look up Algoff Aquifer, you'll see from that western, northern western portion of Texas up near the panhandle north and spreading out both sides, east and west. That's a massive, massive supply of water. And T. Boone Pickens owns that aquifer. Guys, they're going to have us by the tiny hairs. If water gets so contaminated that there's nothing for us to drink, and we have people like T. Boone Pickens and Nestle that have a monopoly on the large amounts of water that are out there, All right, I think we're going to dig into this story. So talking about, I mean, it's science gone, man. Weird evolutions of microbial and viral pathogens just never before seen in the environment. I posted this one on my personal Facebook page about a week or two ago. I don't know if anyone even commented on it. But I read it last night, and I decided to share it on the Before the First Cup page. And this has to be maybe the second most viewed story ever on my page. It went completely crazy. It's out of sciencealert.com from August 26, 2016. This new crazy virus just broke the rules of infection. Never before seen. Again, raise that Spock eyebrow. A brand new type of virus has been identified, and it is so weird. I mean, come on. It is challenging long-held notions of what it takes for a virus to infect and proliferate in an animal host. So never before seen. It doesn't work like anything we've ever before seen in nature. But wait, we have people like Craig Venter and organizations such as DARPA that are making all, and people like George Church, the Broad Institute, and the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering, working on synthetic genomes and creating med science unhindered. It says conventional wisdom states that if a single virus manages to insert its genes into a cell, the host becomes infected. But what would happen if you chopped up that virus and then tried stuffing pieces of that virus into an animal cell separately? It wouldn't work, right? Well, guess what? Researchers where? At the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, yes, more military, have just discovered the viral equivalent of a bag full of body parts. And if you throw them at a cell wall, somehow against all odds, they stick. Quote, "It's the most bizarre thing," unquote, says virologist Edward Holmes from the University of Sydney, Australia, who was not involved in the study. He says, if you compare it to the human body, it's like a person would have their legs, their trunk, and arms all in different places. And somehow, all the pieces come together in some way, and they work as one single virus. I don't think, this is him saying this, anything else in nature moves this way. What are the chances of that? Normal viruses are like perfectly crafted infectious machines. Their genes are all neatly contained in a single viral particle that's about 100 times smaller than a bacterial cell, and its surface is also covered in spikes so that it can latch into any cell it comes into contact with. And once that virus makes contact with a receptor on the surface of a cell, it cuts away at that outer membrane and deposits its DNA and RNA inside. The host enzymes start making new virus particles based on these blueprints. And when enough replica particles have been produced, the virus cell kills and breaks free to infect another. Okay, now let's go back to the start of that scenario and cut the original viral particle into five. That's the case for the Guaico Culex virus. It's G-U-A-I-C-O Second word, Culex, C-U-L-E-X, abbreviated G-C-X-V. A brand new type of, quote, multi-component virus that has been identified for the very first time, and you're never going to believe where they found it. They found it living inside of mosquitoes. Ding! Now, with the advent of Oxitec, genetically modified mosquitoes, Bill and Melinda Gates dropping funding in there, the release of GMO mosquitoes to combat Zika, that never before seen virulent pathogen, that's just gone completely apeshit wild. And then we read that story about the research in Japan about turning mosquitoes into flying vaccinators. Pretty scary that we found some new virus never before seen that's broken into five different parts inside of mosquitoes. For some reason, the genetic material of the Guaco Culex has been split up into five independent packages, and in order to be infected by it, you need to be exposed to at least four different types of these packages. The fifth ball seems to be optional, but until now, multi-component viruses were only thought to infect plants and fungi. But now that it's been found in several mosquitoes in Trinidad, they're wondering how many other animals, including humans and maybe monkeys, could be infected with it. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanche is live up next, and it is Thursday. So we have Ron live at 7 p.m. Eastern with Game On, also known as Rock the Boat Radio. I need to change his banner for him soon. And this week's Hal Anthony at 8 p.m. Eastern and at 10, the Intermediate Radio with S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, have an awesome Thursday, and I will catch up tomorrow.
On the tracks, you can catch every Monday night.